before they...
What is nothing?
Now that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
Free socks.
What is something?
That's deep, bro. Welcome to That's Deep, Bro. I'm your host, Christina Pajitsky. Thank you for downloading this very important episode. I don't know why it's not. It's not that much more important. I just like to say that. Listen, if you don't know, That's Deep, Bro has an official podcast t-shirt. Finally, I thought, why not do it? It's at my husband's website, tomsegura.com, on the merch page. Check it out. You better get your life and get your That's Deep Bro t-shirt available now. It's good. It's like a soft one. We chose a good quality and it's black, of course. What doesn't go with black? What doesn't go with black? Also, I am ramping up. I won't make the formal announcement, but let's just say I'm getting ready for something and I'm going to run my hour April 13th and 15th Brea Improv. April 28th and 29th, Sacramento Punchline. May 4th through 5th in Phoenix, Arizona at Stand Up Live. May 19th through 20th, New York City at Gotham Comedy Club. June 1 through 3, Denver Comedy Works, the downtown one. And then June 16th and 17th, San Francisco at the Punchline. I love these clubs. I'm so excited. I'll just tell you, I'm finally going to fucking shoot an hour and I can't announce when and where, but I'm so excited to finally put this shit on film, son. It's been a long time coming. I'll announce the details on your mom's house. How about that? Because I think that's the mothership show, right? That's the flagship. What else? Amazon. Do you live in Canada? Do you live in the UK? Do you live in America? United States of America? You can use my banner. That's deeprowpodcast.com. There's like a little banner at the bottom of every post. Do your shopping as you normally would. Kicks back a little bit of change to the show. There you go. That's all I have, right? That's what I got. Any other announcements? No. I'm super stoked to announce that Bombas is sponsoring this episode of That's Deep Bro. What's Bombas? Who are they? You know what? I'm wearing their socks right now, and I am absolutely hooked, because they fit perfectly. You know when you wear socks and like the heel is soggy, or I like the longies. I like the old school like cholo socks, and they're either too tight and they cut my circulation off or they fall down. But the good people at Bombas have designed the most perfect socks. And I love this company's story. 4 years ago, two guys quit their jobs at a media company to make a difference in the world with socks. Believe it or not, socks. Yes, why? Because they discovered that socks were the most requested items at homeless shelters. Interesting. Why? Because you can't donate dirty socks for obvious reasons. And gosh, I mean, what more? You need socks a lot. I'd say that's probably one of the biggies in your life. So these two thoughtful gentlemen started a company where every time you buy a pair of their socks, they donate a pair of socks to the homeless. Isn't that awesome? I absolutely, absolutely love it. So every Bombas sock, they made 7 substantial improvements to the ordinary sock. And customers became obsessed with it. And this is a company that grew just on word of mouth. And they've sold over 2 million pairs so far. How amazed is that? So you really can't go wrong with Bombas. Please, please check them out. I love what they stand for and I love their product. It's a win-win. So here's the offer. You get 20% off your first order. There's a money-back guarantee and free shipping on orders $30 or more. Go to bombas.com/bro. That's bombas.com/bro. Check them out, you guys. I just love it.
Love it.
This episode of That's Deep Bro is also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? I swear I don't know, because I feel like there's so many places now. And that's why I like ZipRecruiter, because you can post your job in one place and you can find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free, by going to ZipRecruiter.com/happy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/happy. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/happy. And I also recently just told a kiddo to go look there to find a job, and he just had a job interview because of ZipRecruiter. So there you go. Thank you. Oh, and this, I'm so excited about this one. Have you guys tried 23andme.com yet? Have you tried it? So much fun. Tom and I tried it about a year ago, and it's amazing what you can discover. I apparently am lactose intolerant. Did not know that. Well, 23andMe, as you might remember from science class, there are 23 pairs of chromosomes that make up your DNA. Well, that's where 23andMe.com, a genetic testing service, gets its name. 23andMe allows you to have access to information about your DNA. You can find out how your genes may influence your health, your ancestry, and even physical traits with over 65 online genetic reports personalized to you. Isn't that cool? And I even had a friend who did 23andMe. He was born in the 1940s. And, you know, back then, I guess records weren't, you know, computerized. And he was adopted. And he had absolutely no clue where he's from or anything. And because of 23andMe, he was able to find out. You can actually see, like, what parts of the world your genetics come from. And he was able to kind of have a sense of like where he was from, and you can even see distant relatives that also share DNA with you. It's really, really fascinating. So how does it work? You purchase a kit on their website, 23andme.com. When the test arrives at your home, you provide a saliva sample by spitting into a tube, and that's the best part, right? No, it's super simple. And you just send the kit to them. Once your DNA has been analyzed, you'll get to learn more about what makes you, you. It is absolutely fascinating. Did you know that we are all genetically 99.5% the same? Wouldn't you like to know more about what's in that 0.5% that makes you unique? With 23andMe, you can. To order your kit today, visit 23andme.com/bro. That's the number 23andme.com/bro. I say check it out just for the fun of it. To order the kit. It's so interesting. We got such a thrill out of it. And then they constantly update the site, so they add new things, and you can go back and see who else you're related to because other people join, and it's just fascinating. It's fascinating. That's Deep Bro is also sponsored by Talkspace. Hello. This show should just be called Go to Therapy. I am a huge advocate of therapy. I believe that everybody should be talking to a licensed professional therapist. Why not? That's where Talkspace comes in. It's an online therapy company, and it makes it so easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you for as little as $32 a week. That is a bargain for therapy. Using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message your therapist and talk about your life, what's keeping you up at night, or even your annoying coworker. And see, it's the little things like that that actually take a toll on you. You know, it sounds kind of frivolous, but it really isn't. And why not do it? It can't hurt. To sign up or to learn more, go to talkspace.com/bro, and to show your support for this podcast, use code bro to get $30 off your first month, or 30 durlers That's code bro at talkspace.com/bro. Bro, bro. Talkspace therapy for how we live today. $30 off your first month. Thank you so much, Talkspace. And so many of you have already written to me letting me know that you've tried it, which is fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Get your life. Thank you to all my sponsors. I appreciate you very much. Okay, let's get into it. So much has happened to me this week. It was such a, it's been a whirlwind. Just kidding. I know what the word is. The word is whirlwind. Let's all circle back. Let's put a pin in it. Let's get social. Let's get into it. On that's Deepo. Who do I want to open with this week? Oh, I know. I was listening to. I like Devo today. Some every now and then these guys really tickle my taint. You know. Where the fuck is Devo? Okay. I've been listening a lot to just like jazz too. I've been getting into Vince Guaraldi. I don't know how to say that guy's name. I really like that stuff. Okay. All right. Shit. Fuck. Come on, Blanca. Welcome to That's Deep, Bro. I'm Christina Pajitsky. Thank you for watching this episode on YouTube. You can watch me talk to myself in an empty room with my two dogs now on my YouTube channel, Christina Pajitsky. I think it's youtube.com/Christina Pajitsky/YouTube channel. Cool. Thanks. Thank you, YouTube, for just letting me make the channel my own name and then having to put the YouTube channel on after. Super fun. So lots happening this week. Well, let's see. I got into the Great British Baking Show on Netflix. I'm not a stranger to the Great British Baking Show. I watched it the first season when I was up like at 4 a.m. breastfeeding my son when he was born. And I've rediscovered it. And it is the most wonderfully banal, just like trivial show. And every now and then as a human, you got to do that, right? You have to emotionally invest in the utmost ridiculous thing you can. That's why I think people love The Bachelor. And I love every reality show. My favorite one was a show called Groomer Has It about dog groomers. And every week there's like different grooming challenges to dogs. And I love it when people cry because they couldn't, you know, get the ears clipped perfectly on a schnauzer. And the Great British Baking Show harkens back to a time of reality television, like a more innocent time, a time when I was on Road Rules. It reminds me of that era, back when it was kind of newer. And, you know, on Road Rules, nobody got kicked off on my season. I don't think anybody even hooked up on our cast. We drank beer every night, maybe not even. Like there were nights where we were sober and we just chatted and then good night, guys. Like very little drama. Nobody threw anything at each other. you know, now, of course, I don't even know if the real world is still on, but last I saw that fucking train wreck disaster, you know, it's just tramps hooking up in hot tubs and, you know, people passing out loaded and the cameras are still rolling on them. You know, not to say that that shit didn't exist when I was on Road Rules. P.S. There is a lot of people doing drugs and crazy stuff, but not in the Road Rules Winnebago, but, you know, in the real world house, I would hear stories, but they didn't air it. That's the difference, is that I think now the salaciousness of it, they air it because you got to get those ratings. You got to get those ratings. But I love the Great British Baking Show because it allows me to care about utter nonsense. I care about whether or not the scientists' scones will come out right. I care about, my favorite is this girl, is this season two I'm watching. She's a philosophy student by day. It's British, of course, so everybody's teeth are horrible. Horrible. And I know that that's supposedly a stereotype. No, it's not. When I lived in England in the 90s, my year abroad, their teeth were horrendous then. And I love that. I love you British. And I know a lot of you download listening to me in the UK. What the fuck is wrong with your teeth? And if the Great British Baking Show is any indication of the pool of teeth happening in your great nation, you guys need help. I love you, Brits. I love you. But man, woof. And anyway, Ruby, that's her name. I love Ruby. She's a philosophy student by day. And I've been taking my exams this week. And so I'm very busy. I haven't had time to prepare my scone recipe. I haven't had time to work on me minced pies. And poor Ruby, I like her because she has like a real hard life. And then, but she always pulls together the most fantastic pies. Ruby, I absolutely love this rhubarb berry pie. The crust is a nice bake. That's what they always say, the guy with the wolf blue eyes. This is a lovely bake. I like the crispiness on the outside. And you can see here that the frangibes or whatever, the framboise, has also a nice consistency. The custard is perfect. It's not too eggy. And I like the different flavors. I like the orange mixed with the cinnamon. I like the cardamom mixed with the semolin. And then the lady who I just adore too, the British lady who's the other judge, she's like, she's got that super old school English hair that's like cotton. I don't know what happens to old English ladies, but they it looks like cotton candy, and they tease it up and back, and her eyes are just these piercing blue, gorgeous. Like, she's such a typical, from what I imagine, English-looking person. And she always has a kind word to say. I really like the flavors, but I just don't think it's cooked enough. And it's so funny because these English people, they're so like sincere. And that's something Americans, we really kind of manufacture a lot on our reality shows. There's not a lot of genuine feelings anymore on reality television. And I just love their earnestness. Like, they are so chuffed, to use an English word. They're so chuffed to be there. And like, and when they fail, like, people cry on that show when their bakes don't go according to plan. And I just love it because I get it. I've been on reality shows, plural. Did I say plural? Yes, I'm embarrassed. But because what happens when you get on a reality show, believe it or not, a lot of people don't understand. They're like, how can you be this emotional about a stupid show you're on? Well, because what they do, you have to understand, is they lock you away from the rest of the world. You know, you're really sequestered from, at least on the shows I've done, it doesn't look like the British Baking Show, they do this because I think they have time to go home and practice these recipes and then they do them for the show. Which, by the way, then that means that your bake should be fucking perfect. If you've had time to practice and you don't, that's on you, British baker. That's on you. God. Practice your cookie baking recipe. But on Road Rules and on that TBS show I did, Funniest Wins and some other, I'm done too many. Oh, and I did a show where I picked up hitchhikers and interviewed them. Super safe. They keep, you know, you're away from your family, you're away from everything you know, and your whole world becomes the reality show. So like, if all you care about is what they kind of construct this, they construct this weird world for you, and you start to care about shit that normally you would never care about, you know, like even on Funniest Wins, cause they kept me in a hotel for like almost a month, I think. And we'd film every day. It was horrible. It was so straight, like 12-hour, 14-hour days every day. And we got like one day off, maybe every 7 days. It was brutal. And you break down just emotionally from not resting enough, not seeing your dog, your cat, your spouse, your anything, eating shitty food. Like you're just being broken down. So you get so caught up. Same with road rules. I mean, it's not that what's happening is that extraordinary. It's just that that's your world. And humans are so, we're so fragile emotionally. It's just so, it's really more an exercise in how frail we are. Oh my God, how embarrassing. Oh, it's so embarrassing. Thankfully though, you know, I always try to pull back when I'm on those shows and be like, whoa, wait a minute. What's fucking happening? Am I really this fired up right now? Am I really this emotional because I lost a challenge? Like I remember having that ability to kind of step back and go, all right, this is going to air on television. Eventually people are going to see how ridiculous I am. And I think the ideal reality show, a star is one who doesn't have that ability to step back and go, oh, people are going to see me crying because my cookies didn't bake enough. Right. Oh my God. I'm so embarrassed. Whatever. At least there's a record of me being 20 years old and saying horribly stupid things every week. That's the best part about being one of the pioneers of reality television, is that there's 13 episodes of me being a total douchebag at 20 years old. Oh, and I have a tramp stamp to remind myself. I got it on Road Rules. I have a Chinese dragon tattooed on my lower back. And this is before tramp stamps were called that. So I'm actually a pioneer, not only of reality television, but of the tramp stamp. Isn't that neat? I can't wait to tell my son about that. Mommy, why? What's a tramp stamp? Why do they call it that? Well, when a guy is drilling you from behind and he blasts his load on your lower back, he's got a nice bullseye. That's why it's called a tramp stamp. You're welcome. So there's the Great British Baking Show in my life, and it's been a godsend. I really like it because I like to watch stupid things at the end of the day. And also I got a flat tire last week, which was so funny. And I don't even know what people did before cell phones when they had a flat tire. Can you even imagine? I don't even remember what we did. But so I'm on the 405. I'm on like the hilliest part too, of course, where there's no exit for miles and there's nothing around. It's like that part near the Skirball Center. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's just expansive land. It's like the one part of the 405 that's just fucking empty. Anyway, I pull over and luckily there's this park and ride area, and I'm sitting there and I'm fucking pissed because there goes my day, right? You know, fucking flat. And it was the rush hour too. 4 o'clock on like, it was a Thursday. And I'm just like, motherfuck me. Here it goes. I don't even know if I have AAA anymore. I don't even know what the number is. I'm digging through my purse, you know, like fuck the, and I hadn't eaten yet. Like I had like string cheese and a handful of nuts, and it's 4 o'clock and I was kind of racing home so I could get home to the kid, 'cause the nanny gets off at 5, eat something, you know, the whole deal. My husband's off on the road. So I got this tire and I'm like, fuck. But you know what I did? Do you know what I did? I thought to myself, listen, there are two roads I can take. I can go down the road of poor me. Look at this shit. I can't believe I got to deal with this motherfucking. Or I can get my entire life and I can have a little car party. Because you know what? Everything is on the up. Right, I got a cell phone that's thoroughly juiced up. No problems there. Check. I found some stray water bottles in the car under the seat because there's always food in my car. There's always a stray bag of nuts. There's always loose nuts on the floor. A piece of fruit, an apple somewhere, wedge, some stale fries from McDonald's from a month ago. So I found my provisions in the car and I called AAA. And of course, because of rush hour, it'll be between 20 minutes and 2 hours. That's the window. And I'm thinking, well, fuck it. You know what? I got Sirius XM on the car. I'm going to listen to some Stern. I'm going to catch up on that. And I was starving. So I ordered a DoorDash to my car because it's 2017. God damn it. And you can do that now. On my phone, I can call AAA and I can order a goddamn cheeseburger. And I swear to God, 45 minutes later, the girl pulls up to my car window. I roll it down. Thank you very much. I got a cheeseburger and onion rings. Onion rings because I'm in crisis, guys. I deserve the onion rings and the ketchup when I'm having a bad day. Is it on the primal diet? No. Does my trainer listen to this podcast? No. Who cares? So I ate the onion rings and I said, fuck it, man. And I sat there and I had a car party and I listened to my Stern and I laughed. And then the guy came and then my tire was fixed. And then I rolled home on a donut, not more than 55 miles per hour, as instructed. And I, you know, I sat in my fucking car for 4 hours and I wanted to blow my brains out. But here's the epiphany that I had about that is that there's two roads you can take, right? The get your life route or old Christina. Now, old Christina would have, I think, gone the route of motherfuck, poor me. I can't believe this is how can this happen? Jesus Christ, I should have checked the tires before I left. How come I don't do this? The flogging myself, you know, the getting mad at the injustice of it, the commentary is what actually kills you in bad situations. Now, I don't know how or why or what, but that day I was in a clear space. Oh, I just seen my shrink. That's why. I'd just been from a shrink, and that's probably why I was in a good place. And I let the experience just unfold and wash over me. I sat in my car. I waited for fucking AAA for 2 hours. But you know what? Like I said, I ordered a burger. I ordered some onion rings in my car. I got my radio. I got some stale bottled water. I got a cell phone with juice. What more do I fucking need? The nanny agreed to stay late. The kid's fine. Everybody's fine. Everything was fine. And I'm just proud of myself because for once in my life, I didn't even think about the situation. And I have to tell you that lately, I've been finding that the key to my joy, the key to contentment, is to just not give a fuck about it. It's so weird. And I don't know what happened. I don't know what switch flipped in my brain. But lately, I've found that the less commentary, the less I'm talking the commentary in my brain, right? Not the out loud. But the less judgment I put on situations, the better they get. Isn't that amazing? It's not that, you know, that bad things stopped happening to me. They're going to happen every day. You know, some stupid shit's going down daily. But what I found is that the less I have to think about it, the less I judge it, the less I stay in the victim-y of it, it just kind of happens and I make the best of whatever. You know, I hate to sound like fucking Julie Andrews, but is that what she sings? Just a spoonful of sugar, right? Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in the most delightful way, right? The spoonful of sugar. And for me, it's as simple as, you know, spending $30 on a fucking cheeseburger. That was my sugar. Literally the sugar that helped the medicine go down, but the sugar being not literal, but I guess the your thoughts on the thing, you know. And I had this happen to me with my father who came over. Oh my God. I came over this week, a few days ago. And you know, of course, when you hear your parents coming over, what happens first? The anxiety sets in. Oh shit. Okay. When can I plan is coming over? Okay, maybe if he comes when Tom's here and then the two of them can talk and there's like a buffer. And no, I know, let's go to the park. And that way we can go to the park. We can distract him and he doesn't have enough time to really sit and focus on me. And I don't have to have like too many deep conversations, right? The strategizing begins when I know I'm going to see anybody really who causes me anguish, causes me a little anxiety, right? I used to do that with my mom, right? When she was alive. the strategic planning of how to mitigate the inevitable suffering of the experience you're about to have. Because that's what really it is when you see your parents when you're an adult. And my only goal with my son is he doesn't need to be a genius. He doesn't need to win a Nobel Prize. He doesn't need to be a millionaire. He doesn't need to play football professionally. All I want is that when he's 30 years old and I call him, that he takes the fucking call. That's all I want. I don't want my nightmare is what I do to my parents, which is I see the call pop up and I send it straight to voicemail. My goal as a mother is just when my son is 30 years old, the call comes in and he goes, "Hey, Mom. Hi, what's going on?" That's all I want. Just take my call when you're 30. Then I know I've done the job right. Because, man, that phone rings and I get the immediate anxiety. And when my mother used to call me, oh, it was like I could feel it in my stomach, right? When they fucking call you and you're like, "Ay, yay, yay," the conversation. I just know she's just gonna be an asshole and criticize me. So Dad announced, here's the neat part about my exchanges with my father is that now that there are boundaries set, because I have a child, he asked me, "When's a good time to come over?" Hey, that's interesting. That's called a boundary. That's great. So I give him some possibilities. He agrees to them. He shows up on time, which I love. Like, great. Aces all around. Now, here's what I noticed in my interaction with my father is that the less I judge that, the less I think about it, the less I run commentary about what's happening, the happier our time together is. Isn't that amazing? And it's not that he's changed. It's not that I've changed. It's not that, maybe I have changed. But it certainly isn't that he's done anything different. I mean, yes, he has. I should give him credit for following the boundary rules. Awesome. Check. Yes, you're in. Good. But I noticed that, he's still going to say stuff that fires me up, right? My microwave isn't in the right place. You should put it here, because if you put it here, then that's better. And you should put the baby bottle warmer here. See, you know, and he's watching me eat. He doesn't like what I'm eating. That's going to make me fat. It's not going to help me lose weight. I'm praising Ellis too much. Too many good jobs in one day. You're only supposed to say good job once a day. Stuff like that, right? He sees me parenting, and I'm sure in his mind, I'm just the most overparenting parent that ever was. But the difference is that now I don't give a fuck. And my relationship with him has gotten so much better. Because why? I don't expect him to be anybody else. I expect him to be the guy that shows up and he's stealing my grapefruits and he's telling me the microwave is in the wrong place and I'm not raising my kid, right? I'm expecting all that shit. So when it happens, I don't get fired up about it. I don't wish he were a different person. That's not true. Sometimes I do, but I don't actively wish it in the moment because I know it's futile. I let it ride. I let it go. I just let it fucking be. And I'm telling you, I've been so much happier since I've let stuff go. And now, am I good at this all the time? No, absolutely not. Are there days where shit catches me and I'm fired up for no reason? Yes. Absolutely. And that brings me to another subject I wanted to discuss is that I love your emails. I read them. I don't always answer them and I apologize. And it's not that I don't respect and love you. It's that I'm usually with my kid and I read these emails. And in order for me to write back a thoughtful response, which is what I want to do, I can't do it on fucking two thumbs when my kid is, pulling the dog's tail. I have to focus. So I don't always get around to that time to sit down and focus, and I apologize, but please know that I read them and I think about you and I care. The point is, there's a theme I read in a lot of these emails. I'm not saying it's a conscious theme, it's an unconscious thing that happens is that people start their emails by saying, "Hey, everything was great until X, Y, and Z happened. And then I went on this spiral and then I'm out of control and And now what do I do?" And the panic of like, hey, this bad thing's happening. And what am I doing? Oh my God, this needs to be fixed immediately. And I get it because I'm a human being and I do the same shit, right? But everything was going so great. And then I got into a fight with my husband, and then we fucking hate each other, and everything's terrible. And how can I get back to everything being okay again? Because I can't stand this chaos. This is the anomaly. The chaos is the anomaly. And I just had this epiphany this week that I thought I, well, recently, maybe not this week, but I wanted to share with you that it's not like, from what I've realized in therapy and life, it's not like life is hunky-dory, everything's great, let's keep it this way so that nothing bad happens. It's that your existential crisis comes. It just comes. There's holes in your fucking psyche. Even if you're in therapy, my therapist says this all the time, there's just stuff. And there's no such thing as everything's great. And then all of a sudden this horrible thing, it does. I'm saying, I shouldn't say there's no such thing, but that's kind of inaccurate. Because my belief is that, you know, life is the shit that happens. And for me, the times of nothing's happening, everything's great, that's the anomaly. And those are the moments that I want to cling to, but I don't. But get stoked on those moments. And I think most of life is the crisis, quite honestly. Not severe, but in little. And I think it's the panicking about those times that gets us into trouble, right? So here's my thinking. It's not that the bad thing is happening. That's the anomaly. I mean, that's the problem, actually. It's not the bad thing. It's how do you react, okay? Shit hits the fan. And do you go, oh my God, the shit's at the fan. What the fuck am I? I have to get out of this. I have to get out of this immediately. I have to get back to being in a good place. Or if you can tolerate the uncomfortability, if you can tolerate it for a little bit and just cool the fuck out, right? Got a flat tire, but can I tolerate? Can I cool the fuck out? Can I just kind of relax into the shittiness for a minute here? Because if you do that, I've just found personally in life that it's a lot easier to just go, okay, guess what? I don't know if you've ever surfed before, but if you ride the wave, right? That's a great metaphor. That's why surfing is like the most spiritual thing on the planet. There's the fucking awesome wave. You're on it. And then it crashes and you eat shit and you're suddenly thrust underwater, right? And there's a few things you can do. You can panic. You can freak the fuck out. But guess what happens if you freak the fuck out? You try to pop up. You try to do whatever. You might hit your head on some rocks. The surfboard might come and fucking hit you on the head. You know, you don't panic. You kind of have to chill, right? When the current takes you, kind of chill for a minute. Let the wave wash over you. That's what I do. I don't know if that's right, but I let it, in the past, I'm not a surfer now, but I've done it before. You let the wave go because it does. It goes. Stay chill. Don't try to do anything crazy. When you feel that the water has receded, when it's still-ish, then you pop up. Not too fast because you don't know if that board's above your head, but then you pop up. The point is when the storm comes, calm the fuck down, right? Don't worry. It's normal. The storm is the normal part. The existential crisis is the normal part. The good times, in my opinion, that's the anomaly. When life is clear, placid. You know, you ever seen the ocean in the morning? Sometimes when I lived in Redondo, I'd go down in the water and I would watch people. What's that shit where they stand on the board and they paddle kayaking? Is that what that fucking shit is? And I'd see these people doing that. And it's not called kayaking, but they stand on the board with a pole. And there's times you can do that on the ocean, right? Where it's still and it's like a lake. And that's rare and that's cool. Like, oh, enjoy that. But then don't panic when the wave comes because it will come. And don't turn your back on that shit. Never turn your back on the ocean, people, for a reason. So now what happens? Now, how do people get in trouble? Here's how you get in trouble. You turn your back on the ocean. Quite literally. You know what happens when you turn your back on the ocean? The wave takes you over and you're caught off guard. And now you're sucked in. And now you're panicked because you're caught off guard. And what do you do? How do you react? So the same goes with crisis. If you're in the shit, you can be cool, you can relax, or you can make, what? Bad decisions, right? I'm going to fucking order a double cheese pizza. No, I did order a cheeseburger and onion rings, but I cut it off, right? That was it. That was the last piece of shit thing I ate that day. I didn't eat again. We're done. I haven't had onion rings since. I don't eat it. But I'm saying we order a double pizza and then we get the bucket of ice cream. And then I'm going to go, I don't know, call up the ex-boyfriend, the abusive ex-boyfriend. We're going to hook up. And then I'm going to quit my job. And then I'm going to be broke. And then I'm going to, you know what I mean? It's the spiraling effect, the bad decisions that come out of the bad times. That's how people get fucked, is they make big decisions when they're in the crisis. And that's why you got to remain conscious, right, guys? Just remain fucking cognizant of what's happening. That's the danger, really, I found in life, is like making major decisions when you're just in it, when you're in a bad place. Don't do that. I don't even answer emails when I'm in a bad place. I don't even pick up the fucking phone. If I'm in a funk and I got like a business call or something, I just wait. I just fuck, just wait. Don't worry. And that's another thing too. Don't fucking worry. There's time. There's time for everything. Nothing is that urgent. Some things are, but not all the time. And also I've noticed in these emails, it's so funny, is that people don't feel entitled to their story. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that they'll start the email by saying like, you know, I've got a sister who is, mentally retarded, and I've got an alcoholic mom, and our house was set on fire, and I've been locked in a closet for 2 years. But you know, that doesn't. But my story is not as bad as other people's. I mean, I know there are people that have it far worse. I've done that before, where I'm like, yeah, I had this X, Y, and Z in my history, but it's not the worst thing. I mean, there's people that have it way worse, right? And that's a normal thing to say, and I know that. But A, there's always somebody worse off than you, yeah. And B, so what? It doesn't mean that you're not entitled to your story. And it's interesting because it's always the people that have the most trauma who I've spoken with, who just totally negate their own suffering, who don't honor their own stories. And it's because you probably, the teller of the story, weren't given much empathy at all, right? When you would say something to mom and dad, I'm guessing, hey, this happened to me. Oh yeah, well, so what? This happened to me. What about my story? You know, you're not given empathy growing up, so why would you empathize with yourself? And I'm not saying that you should dwell on the story by any means. And if anything, this podcast has been about not dwelling on the story and how to get the fuck past your story. Because I'm interested in the story. The story is always going to be a part of me, of you, of us, of what. But to not dwell on it, right? To know the suffering, know what it is, but not to stay in it forever and ever. And also know that some stuff's going to set you back and you're going to relive some of that suffering every now and then. But it's not the end of the world. But anyways, for everybody emailing me ever, just know that you're entitled to your story. You're always entitled to your story. It bums me out. And, it fucking bums me out. Okay. About last week, the psychics. Ooh, the psychics. Let's see. I got several emails from people about, because I put a call out there. Are you a psychic? Are you an intuitive? Can you talk to dead people? Are you a medium? Tell me about it. Is it real? Is it bunk? And I have to say, the overwhelming responses have been that it is, drumroll, bunk, 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 bunk.
Just look at the fucking bums you hang around with.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Yeah. So I had one email actually from a woman who did say, yes, I can communicate with dead people, and generally within a year of their passing, which would kind of make sense. She's like, I feel their presence around me. That's one person, but overwhelmingly, I'll read you one. I will not use this person's real name, obviously. It says, it's all BS. I worked at blah, 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 this website. I decided to do it because I'm good at reading people, because I just can. It's not psychic. It's just a developed trait. But I do have an ability to feel and understand the energy of someone mixed in with reading them. I wanted to make extra money because I felt I could just have the cam on and do a few readings a day. It turned into drama. Like people telling me about other psychics and stupid shit that I could care less about. It was mostly girls, young girls, I assume, by how they typed and phrased the questions, all asking relationship advice. Then you would have those same girls hang out in the room and start psychic reading each other while they think they are giving me readings. I'm not sure. I don't understand what that means. But anyway, I ended up getting fired because I would piss people off by not reading tarot. And when I would be asked to predict something, I would give a speech on how I won't do that. They all do that too. It's not possible. And I'm not going to play with someone's emotions. just to temporarily feel all warm and fake fuzzy. I use psychological tricks to bait people to my room from my profile photo and the colors I use to how I had my intro video. I worked to fill my room up with females who just were cat ladies in training. I felt sick and bad because it was just sad. People coming in at times in their lives and times in their lives that are bad and seeking out help and deflection from life. It's all people who are sad with problems that are beyond what I care to associate myself around. I honestly feel it was a certain demographic of society that there was hanging out. Because if you check that site that he worked for, it's just rooms of people who hang out on the psychic free chats. If I wanted to lie to people for a living, I would be a cop or a lawyer or studio executive. Yeah, studio exec is right. Okay. Okay, all right. Lawyer. Okay. Okay, so thank you. Yeah. That's fucking cool. Thank you for being honest. I always ask people the truth because I don't want to ever shame people. Like, look, dude, that's what you did. That's what you fucking did. And whatever. And also, I do think it provides a good service to people in need. It sounds like you provide comfort or whatever. And hey, man, isn't that what it's all about, right? So there you go. Okay. Oh, I like this one. I thought I would. Woo! Is that right, Betsy? You have something to say? Now, this one really tugs on my taint strings. Oh, gosh. Boys are so sensitive. It's so cute. I have to put my metal straw in. Thank you guys for emailing me, and I fucking keep forgetting I'm in the other room. Okay. You know, it's so interesting. I think men are so sensitive, and it's so sad that our society does not allow them to express it. But here's an email from a gentleman. I won't say his name. 24-year-old college student. And all my life, I never seem to get the girl. I feel like I'm in such an awkward position. You know the saying, it's not the amount of friends, but the quality. Well, I'm really lucky to have so many friends that I'd consider very close, but the only thing that seems to be missing is that connection you get with being in a relationship. And I realize that I've done this subconsciously to make up for the lack of a deeper connection. Okay, so what happens was this weekend, this happened, he goes to this college, I made a bunch of friends, three girls, and a guy. They're my best friends here, and over the last 2 months, we've been hanging out nonstop and traveling together. I've had a thing for one of the girls, and this past weekend, we all went to San Francisco. So in my mind, I thought it was okay. This is it. This is the weekend I'll make my move. But it became obvious she wasn't about it, and that her and the other guy had a thing. Oh, boy. Okay. I tell myself no hard feelings because they're are my friends regardless, and that's true, but it's also kind of fucked that this has happened to me so much that I can so easily let it wash over me and just chalk it up to, I'll get over this one like all the other ones. Okay, fuck that this has happened to me, that I can so easily let it wash over me. I guess I'm just a bit frustrated with being told, you're a great guy. I'm always told how kind and generous I am. I'm a mean cook, and I'm always told by friends, parents, whichever girl gets me will be so lucky. So what gives? What I'm trying to get at is, how does one deal with loneliness? Was there ever a period of time before you met Tom that you wondered you will ever find the right person? Oh, my sweet Janes. I love little boys. I just love you guys. Yeah, of course. There's a moment, I think, in everybody's life where you panic and you go, oh my God, I'm going to be a barren spinster forever. I'm going to be alone. I'm going to die alone. And I'm going to end up on an episode of Hoarders, and I'm going to collect Beanie Babies. And that's it. I'm going to die. But, yeah, and then you realize that, okay, that's a little far off. You're going to meet somebody. No, I think there's a few things going on here, my love. How do you deal with loneliness? I mean, it sounds like you've got friends, but the connection you really want is a relationship. You need a girlfriend. You're 24. It's time. Well, let's start with the good news. You are a great catch. If the parents are telling you you're a great catch, you're a good catch, you're a good boy. And the problem with you, my love, you're 24 and you're in the age of hookup. You're in the era of good times. You're in the era of dating apps and disposable relationships. I fucking hated my 20s for this reason, because I'm a marriage monogamy person. I'm not a dater. I wouldn't know what to do with dating apps. I wouldn't know. I hated it. Fucking hated it. So unfortunately, my love, this decade is going to be a little tricky for you because you are what is known as a fucking good guy. You're marriage material, boo-boo. And in their 20s, the girl doesn't want marriage material. Not yet. Maybe. Some girls do. But overall, the culture dictates in your 20s that you got to hook up, you got to bang, you got to score chicks. And, you know, not everybody's built that way. I had a really hard time doing all that stuff. And here's the good news is that you're going to find the girl who is totally good and awesome like you and down for the marriage stuff. And she might be already there. But the problem is in the 20s, you know, good guys don't win out until they're 28. Good guys start to get more valuable when women want to get married. That's the truth of it. So here's what you got to do, my love. I don't know. It's good. It's possible to find a good girl. You go to a nice college. I'm not going to say where. There's a lot of good girls, but that's also, no, it's also kind of a party place where, yeah. Okay. So you got a lot of sluts around you, I think. Okay. The point is, it sounds like you're getting put in the friend zone a lot. You're going after the girl that you get to know because you're a good guy. And that's what fucking good guys do. Can't do that in your 20s. Unfortunately, you got to kind of get out of the friend zone. You got to get out of that quick. So if you like a girl, let's say there's somebody you're into, don't fucking hang out for a long time and get to be her best friend. And the thing with girls that age in your 20s is once a guy becomes your buddy, you're out of it. You're out of the fuckability zone. Because a girl, if she's into you, it's those beginnings. It's those hot beginnings. You got to get in there. You got to get in her pants early. Because by the time she's telling you about some other guy she's into, that's over, boo-boo. She's never going to fuck you. Once a woman sees you as a friend, men, forget it, bro. It's real hard. Now, there are the anomalies. There are the cases where they've been best friends and one day they somehow fall in love. I don't know how the fuck that works. I don't know. That's never happened to me. Because I've always been attracted and then the guy makes the move when she's still hot for you. So the girl's got to be into you. And number one, sexually attracted to you. You got to take a girl out on a legit date. Do they fucking still do that anymore? Take her out. You got to kiss. You got to kiss her early. First date, get the kiss. Don't get in the friend zone. That's the death of the good guy. So you can still be a good guy. I'm not telling you to be a douchebag because I don't think that pays to be somebody else. It's never a good thing. We got to push past your good guy-ness and you got to fucking nut up, man up. You got to be a little bit of a predator here. Now, I don't mean to be a fucking rapist. I'm just saying you got to be a little more, you got to get in touch with the hunter, right? The masculine energy. Man is the hunter, woman is the prey. I'm sorry, that's just how it goes. And when you try to switch that, it's harder. It just fucking is harder. I don't know why. The woman has to be pursued, the man has to chase. That's how it fucking goes. That's how it goes in the wild. That's courtship. Now imagine if a fucking a lion wants to eat a gazelle out in the fucking Serengeti, and the lion goes to the gazelle and goes, excuse me, but do you think it'd be okay if I can later, if it's okay with you, if I pounced on you and I ate you and is that cool with you? How does that feel? And the gazelle's like, go fuck yourself. No, it doesn't work that way. The lion stalks the prey, knows how to get in there and then pounces on that shit, takes it. Now, do I say attack women? No, that's not the point. The point is you have to be a little calculated. You have to be a bit of a lion. You have to be, now isn't that the women hunt in the lion world? Whatever male hunter is in the forest, dude, in the jungle, whatever the fuck that is. You got to be calculated. You got to be a bit of a, you get just a sprinkle of a douchebag in the beginning. And by that, I just mean ask her out on a fucking legit date. Don't go overboard. Don't spend hundreds of dollars on dinner because that's lame too. Then you're overdoing it. You know what's nice? A movie, a bar. Take her to a cool bar. Have cool cocktails, little snacks, tapas. Take her home and then smooch her. And if she doesn't kiss you, she's not there. She's not into it. And then you know. And then you're out. On to the next one. on to the next one. Because in the 20s, that's all it's about, boo-boo. You know, you're not really going to find the serious. It's very rare. So a guy like you, your currency is going to go up significantly in your late 20s. Now your currency is low because you're the good guy. And the girls want douchebags right now. I'm sorry, but it's just the truth. They want douchebags. It's unfortunate. And then the girl matures, right? And she starts looking for the husband. She starts looking for someone to procreate with. And that's when you're going to be the winner. That's when your stock is going to be at an all-time high. And then you can pick the gazelle of your choice. You can pick which of your prey you're going to want. Okay, boo-boo? Mark my words. You're just in a bad time. This is the bad time for good boys like you. Don't ever, you know, don't boo-hoo about how you are. Your character's perfect. You're perfect. These sluts want douchebags right now. That's the problem. These girls are fucking sluts right now. We all were, okay? In our 20s. I'm not judging. I'm not fucking throwing it out there. All right. Yeah, get out of the fucking friend zone. You got to do that first. Okay. I had somebody write in about... Oh, this is... should I close on? What's a good one? this one's interesting. I've spent the last 12 months going to therapy, this listener writes. During my therapist told me that I am a highly sensitive person. Now, as a 39-year-old Australian male, being told you are highly sensitive was initially a blow to my masculinity. My therapist gave me some literature about it, and being highly sensitive is not about being a pussy. It's more about having heightened sensitivity to the world, your senses, intuition. Then he asked me, have I ever heard about highly sensitive person? Yes, I have. They're called HSPs. And about a decade ago, a friend handed me a book called The Highly Sensitive Person. And anybody who thinks they might be, you should check it out. So here's the criterion. This is on their website, hsperson.com. And it doesn't mean you're a pussy if you're a guy and you're a highly sensitive person at all. It has nothing to do with, you know, being a coward or anything like that. So here's the criterion, guys. Okay, listen, are you an HSP? Are you easily overwhelmed by such things as bright lights, strong smells, coarse fabrics, or sirens nearby? Oh. Do you get rattled when you have a lot to do in a short amount of time? Do you make a point of avoiding violent movies and TV shows? Do you need to withdraw during busy days into bed or a darkened room or some other place where you can have privacy and relief from the situation? Do you make it a high priority to arrange your life to avoid upsetting or overwhelming situations? Do you notice or enjoy delicate or fine scents, tastes, sounds, or works of art? Do you have a rich and complex inner life? Can you hear me nodding my head? Yes, for those of you who aren't watching this. When you were a child, did your parents or teachers see you as sensitive or shy? Yeah. So there's a self-test on hsperson.com that you can take this test. And there's a book, The Highly Sensitive Person. Your trait is normal. It says 15-20% of the population are HSPs. It is innate. It's innate. It's genetic. In other words, you are more aware than others of subtleties. Mm-hmm. You are also more easily overwhelmed. This trait is not a new discovery, but it has been misunderstood. Because HSPs prefer to look before entering new situations, they are often called shy. But shyness is learned, not innate. In fact, 30% of HSPs are extroverts, although the trait is often mislabeled as introversion. It has also been called inhibitedness, fearfulness, or neuroticism. Yep, that's me. Some HSPs behave in these ways, but it is not innate to do so and not the basic trait. Sensitivity is valued differently in different cultures. That is so true. In our culture, it's you're just considered a fucking loser, right? It's just so stupid. You know, I never understood why our society privileges extroversion to introversion, because introverts are generally the ones that contribute the most to society, right? When you think about it, the scientists, you know, the guy that's developing the cure for cancer is not out there fucking showboating everything, right? It's so dumb. The people, it's always the introverts, right? The sensitive people, the nurses, the doctors, the scientists, like I mentioned, the school teachers, the midwives, whatever, the other, It's so dumb. In our society, it's just how loud you can be. People think you're smart, and it's just the opposite. At least, fuck, in my life, I've seen that. So yes, this is called the highly sensitive person. If any of this resonates with you, I highly recommend checking it out. Kind of, it helped me like a decade ago. Cause pretty much all this stuff, I hate fucking loud sounds. I hate concerts. I don't like any of this stuff. And it probably comes from having a pretty good childhood, I'm guessing. No, I'm just kidding. It says it's genetic. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just neurotic. That's just me. Okay, one more. I love this shit. This is making me laugh. We just had the Oscars. So, okay, this guy writes in. This guy, John's been sending home run emails lately. He's been asking me stuff. Remember the servers? Why are people rude to servers? And this is the one he just noticed. Why do people feel the need to fake and go over the top with humility? You've mentioned Garth giving shout outs to the lighting guy. This is on your mom's house. But I'm talking about people that respond to good work or nice job with something like, man, I'm just trying to catch up to you. It makes me want to take back the compliment and say something mean. Why can't people take compliments? Are we so conditioned to people saying rude stuff that kindness makes uncomfortable? Is it an attempt to milk the moment and get more compliments? Interesting. Jesus, just say thank you and move on. Yeah, why the over humility? I agree. On your mom's house, I make fun of Garth Brooks. Tom and I both do. Because it's such fucking bullshittery. You know, he's like, oh, you, it's all about you. It's about the lighting guy. It's a bit skeeky. Yeah, everybody else is so special. Not me. I'm not the one. I'm not the guy whose name is on the marquee who's selling 5 million tickets. It's not about me. It's all about them. Well, I think, in sincerity here, that the Garth Brooks phenomenon, I think a lot of that is because of country music, because of the market, the demographic, that they very much privilege realness. And if you even have a whiff of bullshit on you, like, your fucking career is over, you know? And I think Garth is well aware, like, hey man, if I don't fucking cater to these people, there goes the house, there goes the boat, there goes Trisha, there goes my kid's college. So he's very aware, I think, of what he's doing, because it reeks insincere to me. I see it and I'm like, oh, that's a fucking big, big phony baloney. Cause it's over the top. Right. And I honestly think in his situation, I think he does see himself as better than the lighting guy. He thinks he is better than the production crew. And that's why he's working so hard to elevate them. Like, no, you're the stars of the show. Like, he's trying to make them feel better about themselves, even though they don't feel bad about themselves. Now that's the rub here. They feel fine, I'm pretty sure. Just being the introverts, right? Just being the lighting guys. By the way, I say just facetiously because without the lighting guy, there is no fucking show for the night, really. He can't perform in the dark. So yes, they're all important, but do they need the public accolades as much? No, I think Garth's projecting his needs. Garth needs the accolades, the attention, the spectacle of praise. And so he's projecting that need onto the lighting guys and all that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. This phony fucking humility stuff. Oh, just what, not as good as you. Not as good. Like, oh man. I think it's a way to it's kind of a fake way of ingratiating yourself to people. I think that's really what's going on. Cause I've seen like corporate douchebags do that a lot in our business, show business. That is like a number one tactic to get someone to like you is the fake flattery stuff. You know, oh, I love your work. I love you're so amazing. And you're like, you fucking don't even know what you're talking about, do you? You've never watched an episode of this show. You never. Yeah. It's just manipulation, people. That's all fucking manipulation, I think. It's interesting stuff though. Anyways. All right, that's it. I gotta go. It's time to go hang out with the fam. We're gonna take baby jeans out. We're gonna go out into the world today. I don't know what we're gonna do. I don't know. The sun's shining. It's very exciting. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can email me, thatsdeeprowpodcast@gmail.com. And without you, there is no show. Without the listeners, there is no show. Without your emails, there is no show. To sound like Garth. So guys, you know, circle back, put a pin in it. Let's throw that against the wall. What are some other douchebag corporate phrases we can incorporate into this? Let's circle back. And let's do this again next week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching on YouTube. If you have, come see me do stand-up live. Look at my website, thousandranch.com, spelled out thousandranch.com. Get tickets to shows, buy a t-shirt, blah, blah, blah. Have a great week. And stay deep, bros.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with.
It's Christina P, a.k.a. Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house. It's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party. Our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life, and you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.